This is 91.7 WVXU's Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. 45 states and the District of Columbia have adopted Common Core standards for their schools. They delineate what students at each grade level must know in reading and math. Some are critical of the changes, saying they will have a negative effect on student learning. Others disagree, saying the changes will better prepare students for college and work life. We'll try to sort through the details of what Common Core is and is not. We'd like to hear from you, too. You can call us at 513-419-7100 or email us, talk@wvxu.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Later in the hour, we'll talk about the end of Bridges for a Just Community. But first, joining me are Xavier University Associate Professor in the Department of Childhood Education and Literacy and Mathematics Educator, Dr. Deborah Cucci, Boone County Schools Deputy Superintendent, Chief Academic Officer Karen Chesser, and Lakota School District, Local School District Chief Academic Officer of Data Assessment and Core Instruction, Patty Fong. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'd like to start out just describing what Common Core is. And Debbie, I thought I'd start with you. If you could just tell us briefly, what is it?
Well, the Common Core is an attempt to collaborate the states. There were 48 states that actually were in the initiative to write the Common Core. So they looked at the standards from all the states and from some other countries as well. And the 48 states together wrote the Common Core, a set of standards in math and language arts that would better prepare students for the workforce and for college life.
And so how does this compare to No Child Left Behind? I mean, is this different? Does that mean that goes away? How does that work?
No, not at all. It is from No Child Left Behind. It's a matter of fact that we're going to make the playing ground level for all students. So the Common Core is that all students will have a robust learning standards. All students will be expected to perform at this level, and content will no longer be watered down for students.
Patty?
Yes, and with the accountability of No Child Left Behind, you had a lot of inequity among states and what students were expected to learn. So the Common Core standards give us that equity across the states that are using them, and we have those same high expectations for all learners, regardless of socioeconomic level or even geographical location in this case.
And Karen, can you tell us a little bit about what some of those standards are? What are the things that it's math and English, is that correct?
Right. It's math and English language arts, which of course English language arts encompasses writing and reading and language, speaking and listening. And speaking and listening are two areas that we really didn't have in our standards in the past. In addition, they spell out the literacy objectives or standards that should happen in history and science and technical subjects. One of the things that we've learned in Kentucky, now that we've actually been using them for a few years, is that they are, you know, much more highly rigorous. They look like, they feel like they will better prepare our students for the kinds of jobs that they're going to, need or be employed in, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. So, for example, we have standards, like we said, in speaking and listening that weren't in there in the past. We also have standards in, say, statistics and probability that weren't part of the math standards in the past. And more language, more grammar. I think many of the items that we felt like were missing in the past, but at a higher level.
Let's talk a little bit. I got a Facebook comment from Bill who is curious or wants to know if the program dictates what's specifically taught or if each school district still has an opportunity to come up with what they're going to have students read, what they're going to teach them, but then they just have to be able to meet the standard later on, or are they told you will teach these things? How does that work?
Well, a standard tells us what students are expected to know in each content area at the end of each grade level, and each school district can write curriculum to determine how those standards will actually be taught in the classroom. So even though the what of the teaching is dictated through the standards, we still determine the how through our own district curriculum.
And I would say even in Kentucky, it's even at a more local level because we have school-based decision-making councils in Kentucky who determine the curriculum. So that means even if the district has a framework that's been developed from the Common Core, it's still up to each individual school to determine how that's going to be taught, at what time during the year, what texts and resources and instructional materials to be used.
So that means that certainly in Kentucky with site-based, each school picks that out. In the districts, perhaps you pick that out. How do you determine what you need to do? So is there a test at the end? How do you decide if people have met those standards?
Well, we look for mastery language within a standard. What our district has done, we deconstructed the standards, because if you look at a standard in and of itself, it's pretty complex and it's not always very clear what a student needs to know with a standard. So when you deconstruct a standard, you break it into four types. It's either a knowledge target, it's a reasoning target, it's a performance target, or it's a product target. So let's say, for example, that it's a product target. That's something that, through the standard, a student has to create something and has a product to give you at the end to show mastery. So we don't know what the tests will look like yet. They haven't been created. But what we do is we pick out that mastery language and make sure that we're teaching the standard to the target mastery.
Well, in Kentucky, we have been tested on those. You know, we have.
Because you started Common Core a year ago, is that right?
Actually, we've tested now 2 years in a row. Mm-hmm. We started at the district level in June 2010 when the standards came out. We had adopted them in Kentucky right then. And so we started doing the work. We started teaching them. So we've had 2 years of a state assessment already that has assessed the Common Core. And so we have that. But what we like so much more about that is that's now aligned to our other, I don't want to say national tests, but our college, you know, gateway tests. So the ACT, the SAT, the PSAT, the GRE, all of those, these now more closely align. So we do have a state assessment that assesses whether or not our students have achieved these end of year expectations and whether or not they're on that pathway to college and career success.
Can you define it even more and give me an absolute example? Okay, so you've got a third grader and they're working on math. What do they need to know? I mean, does that mean by then they should know multiplication and division? I mean, how do you set them?
Yes. By the end of third grade, they expect the students to be fluent with their multiplication and division. With that in mind, they encourage teachers to begin teaching multiplication and division at the beginning of the semester. And one of the interesting things that I have seen in the differences in the testing is in the past, a question may be a simple fact like 7 times 3 or a small word problem that a child can answer by answering 7 times 3. The state of Ohio is going with PARC testing. There's two types of tests that will be given in the year 2015 to test the Common Core. One is PARC and one is SMART. Ohio has gone with PARC, P-A-R-C-C. And in that test, the students in third grade will be asked to drag all of the problems that have a correct, that are show equality into the box. So it may say 2 times 4 equals 8 times 1, and they would be expected to know that and draw that in. So you're not looking for one correct answer. You're looking at all the answers and providing all the answers that offer a correct solution.
And why is that a good thing?
Because it makes students actually have to work out each problem rather than looking for an answer, really read the question, look at what it's asking for, and then to look at each of the possible answer solutions and choose all that are correct. I feel like sometimes we've taught children to look for an answer. We've taught them keywords. We've taught them test-taking strategies that try to eliminate the need to read a problem and understand it.
Karen, you're shaking your head. What do you think?
Well, I would totally agree that we find that the way that students, now Kentucky is on the fence about if we're going with the national assessment because we've invested so much and we feel pretty good about our assessment that we have now. And so we're sort of taking a wait and see approach. We're in the sort of looking at the PARC assessment. But I would totally agree that the types of assessments that have to happen to see if students understand these standards and these skills are different from just a multiple choice test. So we want students to actually use those skills. And many times a test can't assess that. So if we want students to see if they can present an argument through speaking, or if we want students to be able to take multiple data charts and be able to make inferences about those, that requires assessments way beyond some end-of-year assessment.
Patty?
Well, and with what Debbie said about the math example, we're putting value on the process of mathematics instruction and mathematics learning. It's not the value on having one specific answer, but being able to explain, rationalize, defend how you were able to arrive at that answer. And sometimes that's the part that's the most difficult for our students right now, because under our old standards, we have them trained how to find the right answer and how to find the right answer quickly. And we're taking less emphasis off of that and putting more emphasis on the process and the reasoning and the skills behind getting the correct answers.
I'm going to date myself here, but when I was a kid, you know, new math came out and it was, you know, the stuff my parents said, we can't help you because I don't know how a teacher is teaching you to do that sort of thing. And then I look at the stuff my daughter is doing. She's going to be 11 and it was the same sort of thing. Some of what she's doing, I get completely. Some of it, I don't completely get. Are parents going to be able to look at this and know what their kids are doing? Is it go back to anything we've done before or is this a totally new way of teaching?
I think that we start with the conceptual understanding of a concept. When we start with multiplication, multiplication has nothing to do with the actual equation 3 times 4. Multiplication is having 3 sets of 4 items. So we want students to be able to visualize it. We teach them and show them concrete models to use. And then as they learn their singular multiplication facts, that's what parents are familiar with. Parents want sometimes to just jump to, well, you've just got to memorize 3 times 4. We're not emphasizing memorization until they understand the concept. So I think that as we get into deeper concepts, some things will look unfamiliar. For example, matrix math. A parent says, I don't get that. That's new math. But it is actually a conceptual way for them to learn double-digit multiplication.
Well, and I would say, too, that there I feel like there's a great mix with this now, because if you look at the standards, you'll see that they will talk about still knowing the standard algorithm. And I think maybe sometimes we've done some math programs that didn't bring students back to the standard algorithm. They've given them some alternatives, but didn't give them an array of alternatives so they knew the standard as well. But I can tell you personally, I have a student now, a child in 6th grade going into 6th and one going into 8th. And I feel like my child in 6th grade, who has come from, you know, being more enmeshed in that foundational with the standards, is at a higher level in mathematics because he's learned conceptually. So he's learned things like bar model drawing from Singapore or some of these other concepts.
We're going to continue our discussion in just a moment talking about reading. We've spent a lot of time talking about the math standards. I want to get into reading, too. And I certainly want to hear from those of you listening right now. The phone number to call is 513-419-7100. You can email us, talk@WVXU.com. Or find us on Facebook and Twitter. And then later towards the end of the program, we'll hear about the human relations group Bridges for a Just Community. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We're talking about Common Core education standards. My guests are Xavier University Associate Professor in the Department of Childhood Education and Literacy and Mathematics Educator Dr. Deborah Cucci, Boone County Schools Deputy Superintendent Chief Academic Officer Karen Chesser, and Lakota School District Chief Academic Officer of Data Assessment and Core Instruction Patty Fong. You can join the discussion by calling 513-419-7100. Email us, talk@wvxu.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. I'm especially looking to hear from teachers who are already maybe in Kentucky dealing with the Common Core program, in Ohio getting ready to deal with Common Core. And again, that phone number is 513-419-7100. We talked a lot about math. There's been a lot of concern out there also about the reading standards. Some people say because students will be required to read less fiction and more nonfiction, they won't enjoy the classics. They won't get the reading they used to get. What do you guys say?
The classics will still be there. By the time a student leaves our doors as a senior, they should be reading about 70% informational text. And that informational text would be your content material. And when you look at what our students need outside of high school when they go into college and career, they're going to be reading to gain information. They're not going to be doing reading for pleasure within the workforce or in college much. And what we failed to do up to this point is to prepare them for the high level of reading that needs to occur once they're in college. Even in their everyday lives, when they're looking through insurance forms or tax forms, the level of reading of those forms is so much higher than what we're providing within our classrooms each day. So we've got to up the ante.
And I would say the classics are still there, maybe even more so. For example, you know, Paul Revere's Ride, that poem is in the 6th through 8th grade list of exemplars. You know, I think we've gotten away from some of those classics. But because we now have examples of what text should be read at each level. And these are not dictated to teachers or schools, but just an example, we're able to, I think, incorporate more of the classics, actually.
Debbie?
I agree. I think that it is a wonderful idea and something that the university we're trying to stress, especially in math and sciences. Sometimes the reading can become quite cumbersome for middle school students. And that's where we find that they have the greatest difficulty is in reading informational text. So teaching children as part of our math curriculum and science curriculum how to read the science text and informational text is very beneficial. So having language arts help us in teaching that as well is going to be very beneficial.
And I guess we should point out the reading is over, as you said, all of the classes, not just their reading or English classes specifically.
Right.
And I think I read somewhere also that things like reading the Declaration of Independence counts, and that's nonfiction.
Yes. Mm-hmm. One of the great things that will be happening now, rather than reading about someone else's account of history, students will be diving into those historical documents and making their own interpretation of history by looking at the authentic documents. And if you look at the reading level of those types of papers, very high rigor involved, and the vocabulary that the depth and the breadth of those documents, giving our students the tools to be able to understand that and then understand history through that first person perspective is going to give them a big boost when they go into college, especially.
The question's from Carl, and this was related to what we were just talking about with the Common Core standards in terms of literature and informational reading. And informational reading really is anything that's nonfiction, is that right?
Correct.
Yes.
So there's all a variety of topics then that folks, as you mentioned, that people can look at. I want to go to the phones now. If you have a question, 513-419-7100. Want to hear from anyone with a question, especially like to hear from teachers who are dealing with it right now. We're going to go first to Renee from Madison Place. Hi, Renee.
Oh, Carrie from Madison Place.
Carrie, I'm sorry. I got the name wrong.
Okay. I was, first of all, who grew up with ADD and all that sort of thing, the concept of having multiple answers and having to, you were talking about dragging them over all the answers that apply, makes me almost blank out at thinking about that kind of test taking. And I was wondering how they were going to deal teaching to that kind of the students who don't respond well to those kind of tests.
Well, let's ask, and then we'll come back for your second question. Are there alternative tests for children with learning disabilities?
Yes, we do. I mean, in Kentucky, depending on what the disability is, I mean, we have accommodations. Now, that's been sort of controversial in Kentucky, though, because are we looking at whether or not students understand the reading on their own? You know, are they able to do that without accommodations? So we've gone sort of back and forth with that. I think on what we try to do instead, though, is figure out what we need to help students do the types of reading they'd need to do in real life and try to do through response to intervention or a structure, help those students get the skills they need so that no matter what type of test is in front of them, that they'll be able to do well on that.
Right. And preparing them for that in the classroom every day, a student won't see that kind of a problem on a test for the first time. That will be one way in which we're changing instruction. So on a daily basis, students will be learning how to operate with more than one correct answer.
Carrie, did you have another question?
I was also wondering about how in the lower income schools and districts, how it works a bit where you have one standard, but maybe the teachers have other problems to deal with throughout the day, like, you know, kids not eating enough or issues at home and all that sort of thing, and how the school is then perceived based on whether or not the kids measure up to these tests, and how the school then is reflected.
What do you think when you're dealing with, and certainly there are a lot of districts where kids come to school hungry and they don't have the supplies and maybe they don't have the parental support they need. Does this make it even more difficult for them?
Well, yeah, of course it makes it difficult. When kids have a lot of barriers, they have, you know, there's many things they have to overcome, but we do a disservice to students if we don't also expect that they can get to college and career readiness. And so it is our goal and our role as a district or as a school to do whatever it takes to help them overcome those barriers. And we have many shining examples in Kentucky and in the Boone County school system where there are, you know, high poverty, highly transient schools, but they've been able to achieve at a very high level because those teachers and the school and the leaders have figured out how to help them overcome those barriers.
Right. And the number one commonality among those schools, if you look at the research, is high expectations for all learners, regardless of who you are and where you come from. And then when you combine that with the best instructional practices, those two factors alone can pretty much overcome many of the problems students come into our schools with.
And I think that's exactly what No Child Left Behind set to do, and that is to make all environments equal in their learning opportunities for all children. And, you know, we will always have this problem, unfortunately. It's not new to the Common Core. It's been with us for a long time. But to break the cycle of poverty, I think it's really important to make sure that all schools are equipped with the same technology and the same learning expectations for all students. So we have to make sure that all students have technology training so they know how to use the computers that they'll be using for these tests. We have to make sure that all students are given examples of tests where they are asked to think critically, and I think that will be the key to breaking the cycle of poverty.
Carrie, thanks so much for your phone call. We're going to go now, and our phone number again, if you want to get in on the show, 513-419-7100. Jordan is calling in from Mason. Hi, Jordan.
Hello, greetings from Mason. I am a critic of the Common Core standards, and it's for some of the reasons that you all have just sort of addressed here. I'm very concerned about having the exact same expectation for every student in America. I think that when you have a uniformed expectation, it's really hard to teach an individual student the best way that they can get their best education. And you have to have a creative approach because not all students learn the same way. So having said that, I'd just like for you all to put on your other hat, and I'd like to hear a little bit of why is the criticism of the Common Core so loud? Why are you hearing it from both educators groups and conservative groups? And why is it that in Indiana, they have basically put the whole rolling out of the standards on hold because there's a great amount of concern about what it's going to do, especially in our poorest schools. So if you all could talk about that for a few minutes and some of the criticism around Common Core, I'd be really glad to hear it. Thank you.
Thank you.
If I could start, there's another concept to the Common Core or to our educational system, not just the Common Core, but there is something called value added. And with value added, it assures that all teachers must at all times differentiate for their students, the lowest students and the highest students. Every student must indicate growth. And that means that our accelerated students must continue to excel at the rate that they have been excelling. And our students who are slower achievers, we know that it would be a great jump for them to come to grade level. So you will be accounted, you will be given credit if the students are able to make progress at the rate they've been making progress. So I don't want you to think that it will be stifled in any way, that every student's going to be learning the exact same concept at the same time in all schools in the nation. That's not what the Common Core is about. The Common Core says this is what they should learn, but then we take each individual child individually and we make their growth, their learning plan to fit their growth plan.
I mean, I'd like to echo what Debbie is saying, and that is that I wouldn't say it's the expectation for every student, it's the minimum expectation for every student. So that, you know, one of the reasons why it's so important for us to have sort of a stair step or a ladder that says each grade level is that if we've got a student who is in third grade, for example, but really hasn't mastered second grade skills yet, then we have to sort of fill in the gap there and get them to the third grade. Or if we have a student who comes to third grade and they have already mastered third and fourth grade, then we take them where they are. But at least we know what that expectation is at grade level. Without a Common Core, and I know we've had this in the past. So, for example, I taught in the early 90s in Kentucky. We had the Kentucky Education Reform Act. And at that time, we had no curriculum. We just had a set of about 50 statements. And then we as a school had to figure it out. And it was a disaster because we had the water cycle being taught every year for 5 years, or people just forgot to teach fractions. You know, we have to have a level or a sequence of learning at each grade level. But again, it's a minimum expectation. Then we have to differentiate or personalize for each student. Now, to your other question about why has this been so controversial, it has been interesting that in Kentucky, we've been doing this for 3 years and been testing for two, and all of a sudden, there's been this outcry. So we're not quite sure where that's coming from. I think there are a lot of misconceptions or myths, and it seems to be that it's not about the standards themselves or about that stair step or about those, you know, end of year expectations. It's more about the idea that somebody else created this rather than teachers or schools. But again, I think there are a lot of misconceptions about the development of that.
Our number is 513-419-7100. If you have a question or a comment, I'd like to hear from some teachers if you have the opportunity to call in. We go now to Whitney from Covington. Hi, Whitney.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm calling, I'm actually an educator myself. I'm a guidance counselor at the elementary level, and I read something online that concerned me. First of all, let me just tell you that I am generally supportive of the Common Core standards. I agree with the woman that was just speaking that we absolutely need to track each individual student as well, sure that we're not duplicating ourselves as we go from grade level to grade level. But one thing I read online that concerned me, and I don't even know if it's true because I don't always believe everything I read online, is I read somewhere that 135 people wrote the Common Core standards and that not one of those teachers that wrote them was a kindergarten, first grade, second grade, or third grade teacher, that they were all fourth grade on up. And I'm wondering, A, is that true? And B, what you all think of that if it is true?
Do you all know?
I don't know personally if that core group that wrote them did that, but I do know personally that because we had 80% of our teachers say, you know, gave some sort of feedback. What happened was those standards were put out there to the public, and then feedback was taken nationally from teachers. And we do know that feedback was actually used because the standards did, you know, change dramatically.
And I know that the kindergarten math standards were based on the National Council of Teachers of Mathematics kindergarten suggestions, math curriculum.
And what I take comfort in knowing is that these standards are progressive. So they take a student from the very beginning of what they need to know in kindergarten, and each year those standards are built upon in the next grade level. So even if there was not a kindergarten teacher or a first grade teacher involved in the writing, which I couldn't speak to that to know that if it's true or not, knowing that those standards progress. So wherever a student needs to be in third grade, then you would need to work backwards and think about, well, if they have to be at this place at the end of third grade, where would they then need to fall at the end of second grade? Where would they need to be at the end of first grade so that they could progress through those standards successfully by the end of 12th grade?
Thank you for your call, Whitney. We appreciate it.
I appreciate you hearing me. Thank you.
Thank you. This question is from Tara on Facebook, and she says, and we talked a little bit about this, how does Common Core address needs and challenges based on poverty and cultural bias versus only blaming poor achievement? In other words, I assume that some students come into school just because their parents perhaps are highly educated or they have been given a lot of exposure to the literature and culture at home where other kids have not. How is that judged when it comes time to take the test?
That's an issue that we've been dealing with since time began, whether we're working under Common Core standards or the old standards. We take kids where they are when they come in, we assess their knowledge, and we work with them from that point on. The question before talking about the equity with all students and how do you expect all students to master the same content, we start with them from the point of where they enter. And we provide intervention to those students who are not on grade level to get them caught up on the material that they needed in order to be successful at the current level they are. And as Debbie said, the students who are ready to go beyond, we take them beyond by going deeper into the standards.
But do the tests judge how far they go from one point A to point B, or do the tests judge at the end where they are?
Yes. In Kentucky, our accountability system is made up of not just achievement, like your overall score on the test, but also we look at our different subgroup and see if there is a gap. But the most exciting part, I think, of our assessment has to do with growth. So it's sort of like what Debbie was talking about before, this idea of we take a student where they are and we compare them to other students who started out like they did, and they have to make at least as much gain as the average student. And so it does take into consideration, at least in Kentucky, you know, a third of our overall score has to do with, did these students grow? Whether they were really high level or they were really struggling, did we get them caught up to where they need to be college and career ready? And then just one quick thing to answer her is that, you know, I think schools are realizing that sometimes it takes more than a 6-hour instructional day to get kids caught up. And so we've been extending the day, we've been adding extra time, doing everything it takes to make sure that we fill in the gaps for those students who might come to us and have been in 7 schools in 2 years and the like.
We seem to have a little discrepancy on numbers here. Maybe you guys can help me out. Is it 45 states that have adopted this or 48? I think somebody mentioned 48.
48 states were involved in the writing. 45 have adopted at this time.
And they've been adopting now for how many years?
Well, June 2010 was when the draft was written, and that's when in Kentucky we started working with them, and our first assessment was in April of 2011 or 2012.
I want to point out that on our website, wvxu.org, on the Cincinnati Edition page, you can find a link to the Common Core education page. So if anybody wants to check out any information there. Also, a question from Raymond, and I think we addressed this, but just to be sure, does Common Core teach mathematical progressions in the same grade levels across all participating states? So do all students learn multiplication in the same grade? And Debbie, I think you said that was
If you're using the Common Core, yes, all students should be exposed to multiplication or concepts at the same grade, unless they're very gifted, and then they may start it at an earlier point or go beyond. But traditionally, most students will be going through the Common Core at the same time.
Thank you all for being here. It went very quickly. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've been talking about Common Core. My guests were Xavier University Associate Professor in the Department of Childhood Education and Literacy and Mathematics Educator Dr. Deborah Cucci, Boone County Schools Deputy Superintendent Chief Academic Officer Karen Chesser, and Lakota Local School District Chief Academic Officer of Data Assessment and Core Instruction Patty Fong.